response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead by a score of 3-2. Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swan hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 66. I think I'm going to call it Sterling's Gold. Huh? How about that?
Nice.
Nice. You like that? Listen, it's a real pleasure to welcome in John Sterling, the voice of the New York Yankees here. And we got two giddy schoolboys here, and John Senecal and Matt Sarois. John, how you doing?
Well, I'm fine. I'm glad that you're all happy and getting ready for the season. I am too.
Well, you know, I just want, before I hand it off to John and to Matt, since they have so many questions, I'm just curious how you feel about baseball right now. I mean, to me, the lockout was, for the average fan, a lot of nonsense, and they didn't even necessarily improve the game, and it looked like pennies on the dollar for the money they make. So I just, how do you feel about the game after being on the brink of losing part of a season?
Well, I'm not really terribly moved by what goes on in the off season. You know, I know it makes me happy, and that will be broadcasting games and watching games. And the lockout was unnecessary, and it was all about, on both sides now, greed and ego. And if they settled on the date that they did, they could have settled 3 weeks earlier, 4 weeks earlier, and there wouldn't be the problems of trying to compress everything. But anyway, that's done, and it's done for 5 years. I wish they signed for 10 years. The owners make a lot of money. The players are doing great. And now baseball has to do things. I think they're going to do them next year, but they got to get rid of the shift. And I think look at hitting a different way, back to the old days. Forget about launch angle and exit velo. Anyway, I'm very excited about the year. I'm a child. It's so easy for me to get excited about something I like, and it is something I like, and you know, I'm going to chase the Yankees around all year.
Hey, John, it's John Senecal here, another lifelong Yankee fan.
He's giddy.
I'm interested as far as what you think the fans will feel after all this lockout nonsense. You know, you sit up in the booth and you look out, and I mean, I watch on TV and I see a lot of empty seats in those box seats at Yankee games, and I say those are corporate people. But what about, you know, the normal fans that want to come out there every day with a family? Brian has talked about not wanting to go to Red Sox games this year.
True.
Yeah. Well, I've been through this before. I mean, it has to do with age, and I got a lot of age. So I've been through this 94, that ridiculous strike or lockout, and they had to cancel the World Series, disgraceful. And then a great Supreme Court justice, Sonia Sotomayor, made sure that baseball would begin in 95. It began late, as I recall. That's a long time ago. And you know what? The fans, I'll never go back. I'll never. Then after that, the Yankees got good, and they drew 4 million more every year for 4 years. So,
you're saying they'll come back? You think they'll come back? You think they're going to come back?
Yeah. Why? It's fun. And baseball gives you a great bang for your buck. You can follow your team for 6 months. They play almost every day. So, you know, some people will say, oh, I'm not going to another game. But you know what? There are a lot of people out there. The big teams are, you know, the Blue Jays just got Matt Chapman to play third. And they have a terrific hitter at every spot in their lineup. So you know, we're in a very competitive division with Toronto and Tampa and Boston and the Yankees. So I think if you love baseball, you're going to love it. That's all.
It's interesting you say that, John, because, you know, a lot of people are saying the Yankees and the Red Sox might be a third or fourth place team in the AL East this year with the way things are going. You know, Tampa
Could very well be. Very well be.
I want to ask you, what do you feel about as far as the Yankee situation now? We got, you know, you miss out on Freeman. We re-sign Rizzo, but we have this hanging over our head with Aaron Judge coming up next year as a free agent. Now, what is your take on Aaron Judge? He's going to be 31 years old. You know, is he the future for the Yankees? Should he be the next Yankee captain?
Well, I don't know about his future and if he should be the captain of the team, but you can't lose a guy like Judge unless you replace him. I don't know how you replace him. So, you know, the Yankees, they're going to do it. They're going to sign him and sign him for pretty good money. And I think it's very important. I mean, he's first of all, you know the power that Judge has. But he's a terrific outfielder and has a great arm. He is the prototypical right fielder. So
what do I think?
I think they have to sign him.
Yeah, I think it's lost with Aaron Judge's size how great of an athlete he really is and great defending player. I'm glad you brought that up. But you do think that Aaron Judge is, you know, he is the future for the Yankees, and you're not too sold on the captain thing? I mean, it's been almost, 8 years since we've had a captain after Jeter left.
Well, let me tell you why I say that. Because I don't think it's important. I mean, who's the captain? It depends how you play. And if they want to make Judge the captain, I'll be all for it. He's a good guy.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, why do you need a captain? You know, do the work on the field.
Right.
All right. Listen, I want to go back. You know, I don't know. You know, I just in reading about your history, John. You know, I think back. Forget about contemporary times. You sort of came of age. I mean, I guess your teenage years was Mantle was sort of took over. I know you grew up in Manhattan. Like, were you even a Yankee fan? Were you a Brooklyn Dodger?
Oh, my God.
Okay, so were you
I was a tremendous Yankee fan. So was my dad. So were my best buddies, Doug McCartney, Dave Mills, Al Parr, people like that. So, yeah, there was no question that I was a Yankee fan. Also, I might add this. When I was coming of age, like 7 or 8 years old, the Yankees about won every year.
Right.
So it was very easy to root for them. And but anyway, I've loved it since I was a little boy. I've loved basketball, hockey, football. I love music, and I've had those companions with me all my life. I'm very fortunate.
You know, it's true. I mean, if you look at his past, you didn't start off doing a lot of baseball. You did a lot of basketball and hockey as well. Did you, I mean, any stories as a kid, like skipping school to go to Yankee Stadium or like your first memory of going to the park? I mean, you're sort of my dad's age, and he used to tell me stories that when it'd be ladies' day at Fenway, you know, his mom would pull him out of school and do all that kind of stuff. It was just a different era. And obviously the fedora era is something we're all kind of romantic about.
Yes, I agree. I lived relatively near the Lexington Avenue subway. It was then in letters, IRT, and it went from 86th to 125th to 138th to 149th and then to the stadium. So I went there. I went to the Polo Grounds a lot, too. I used to take a Fifth Avenue bus. It would let me off right in front of the entrance that I would go in. I mean, there were three baseball teams, three broadcasts, seven newspapers. You know, I had a great growing up.
When you were growing up as a Yankee fan, did you have a favorite player? Now, I came up in the rough era when they were struggling in the late 80s,
right,
early 90s, and Don Mattingly was my guy and still is to this day. Did you have a favorite player?
Well, you certainly picked a good one. I love Mattingly, too. I'll just sneak this in before I go back to favorite players. When I joined the Yanks in 89, game would be over, we'd be in the clubhouse, and there'd be a line, including me, in front of Don Mattingly's locker for him to sign stuff for the players. So I knew he'd be a really good manager. He's a heck of a guy, a great player. Too bad that his back flared up. It cost him the Hall of Fame in probably 5, 6, 7 years of great play. Hey, he's had a great life, and he's been managing now well over 10 years. You know, I never had a favorite player. I love the name, so I rooted in his last days for Charlie Keller, Charlie King Kong Keller. But the Yankees that I really rooted for, you know, I'm left-handed, and I'm a left-handed hitter and yada, yada, and totally left-handed. So I always used to root for the left-handed hitters. Didn't matter if it was Yogi or Gene Woodling, obviously Mickey when he batted left-handed and such. So Joe Collins. I loved all the lefty hitters. And also, I love players from other teams. And this is true in all sports. You know, I wanted to go and see Gordie Howe and Boom Boom Geoffrion and Bill Russell. And anyway, you get the idea. I wanted to, I love seeing the great players come in. So I've always loved the sport as much as rooting for, you know, then the Yanks, Knicks.
So you're
Giants. Obviously, there were no Jets. There were no Nets. So anyway, I grew up in a great era when New York was ablaze with sports.
So you're a fanboy yourself, too. So when, like, Shohei Ohtani comes to New York, you're going to go down and
see
him.
Absolutely.
So you can't. I feel like there's a little political side of this, John. This, you know, Brian Shackman, John Senecal, Matt Sorois here with John Sterling on episode 66 of Fanbase: A Deep Dive into the Greatest Rivalry in Sports. When I tick down, I mean, if you look online, you were there to MC the retirement, the jersey retirement. You know, Posada, Pettit, Bernie, the whole crew from those great years: Tino, Torrey, Jeter, Mariano. You can't tell me there isn't a favorite guy you like to at least interview. You don't have to say it's your favorite guy. But maybe you could say the guy you like to talk to the most.
Well, I've been a whole bunch. You want me to go all the way back? Steve Farr became a friend of mine. I went to his wedding. Deion James became a friend of mine. David Cone became a friend of mine. And all the others that you name, well, Paul O'Neill, because I see him in the booth all the time, or I will. get him out of the basement in Cincinnati. And I generally like everyone, and if someone isn't nice to me, I don't bother talking to them, so I'm cool. So anyway, if you want to talk about what I've done, just because isn't that I did it, it's because I was working and they did it. But I literally broadcast every game that Derek Jeter played, and I literally broadcast every game that Mariano pitched. Now, you'd have to say that's pretty good.
Yeah,
one guy was a 100% ballot Hall of Famer, and the other guy missed by one vote because some
bozo. Yeah.
And he did it just to be different, just to show, hey, yeah, I'm not voting for Jeter. Isn't that ridiculous?
But Willie,
and also ridiculous for Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, Stan Musial, Henry Aaron, Willie Mays, all of them. It's ludicrous, but that's how it is in life.
John,
people do things for their own reasons.
John Senecal here again. You mentioned, you know, Steve Farr and Deion James being very close to them. I mean, you obviously get relationships with these players over time, you know, flying with them, traveling with them. You know, they're human beings outside of this sport. How does it make you feel, like, you know, when one of those players leaves, like, you know, a Jeter retires or someone gets traded?
Well, they have an awfully good life. I don't feel sorry for someone when they get traded and they go to another team and make X number of $1 million. So, man, that doesn't bother me at all. You know, I like the whole thing. I like the game. I like broadcasting. I've liked it. You know, people ask me, how could you have done all those games? I did 38 years without missing a game for the Hawks, Braves, Yanks, and then some Ivy League games on Yes and stuff like that. Anyway, why? It isn't something I intended to do. It isn't something that I, oh, yeah, here's another game. Let's put that on the list. I just got up, you know, shaved, showered, brushed my teeth, and combed my hair and went to the ballpark. That simple. And as long as I have health, I'll do it this year, too.
John, Master Royce here. You just mentioned you did the Hawks games and everything, too. What's the difference between calling a basketball game and calling a baseball game? Is it the pace, or how'd you differentiate those?
Yeah, in basketball, I used to sit next to the bench. I was in the game. I was part of the team. And basketball is a rhythm, smooth, easy rhythm. And I played it all my life, too. So I think that's the easiest game to call. Hockey, you know, there's a lot of broken plays. And baseball, until they put in a pitch clock, there's a lot of empty time. So anyway, they're all fun. I've loved doing all of them. I've now been able to do hockey, basketball, baseball, and football. I love them all. And there you are.
And John, you said you don't have access to the players like you used to anymore. Is that something like with COVID, or is that something that's been like that?
Well, it was happening before. In basketball, they took the radio announcers and put them up in heaven. They could barely see the game. They don't care about it. You know, they're obviously doing very well and making money. And a buddy of mine who's in the NBA said they're starting to put TV upstairs too.
Well, you know, I want to interject on that because, and John's going to jump in a second, because I sense that you have separated the players and all the other garbage from the game. And I'm wondering if one of you have compartmentalized it, because for me, like, the money has sort of created that distance because they have to protect themselves and the fans are a little nuttier. And so they push back. And now with the media, they're so much more protective of their brand. And it's annoying. I've been in the media. I've been around the ballpark, you know, 1/50th of you, but I have been around the ballpark. I've covered some World Series and All-Star games and opening days. And I, as a human with pride, it's very frustrating, that relationship between player and media. So did you compartmentalize because you love the game, so you just block out the people almost because of
easily.
The way it's...
Easily. I go and enjoy the game and broadcast the game to an enormous audience, and I'm broadcasting with a dear personal friend who's great on the air, in Susan Waldman. And so I don't have any kick coming. It's easy. But anyway, what they've done is limit access. It's much worse for the media, for the written or print or I don't know what you call the
digital
online media. But anyway, they separate them. They cut their access. And it's just quote unquote. Of course, I got lucky. They hired Buck Showalter as manager in 92. And from that point on, and Michael, Susan, and I became friends, off-the-field friends, real friends with Buck and his wife. And then a true friend of mine became manager of the Yankees, and Joe Torre. Well, think of the access I had. We went out for dinner almost every night on the road. So anyway, that's all over. It's okay.
You know, John,
but I feel sorry. I don't feel sorry for broadcasters. I feel sorry for the quote-unquote media, whose living depends on getting stories. And my living doesn't depend on that.
John, you talked about, you know, calling games and everything. And, you know, we can't do this interview without talking about your home run calls. But me specifically, you know, I feel like your home run calls obviously are like a brand. You know, I remember my 3-year-old running around the house yelling, an A-bomb from A-Rod.
Good.
But... I'm interested to hear a little bit of the stories of how this whole thing started. And I know my favorite one is Burn Baby Burn.
It's the first.
But, you know, I imagine there's a lot of prep that goes into it. And have you thought about Isaiah Kiner-Falefa yet? Because he hasn't hit a lot of home runs, but he's going to hit one.
Which question should I answer first? I don't spend a lot of time on it. A lot of them have come up while I'm broadcasting, you know, running my big fat mouth. A-bomb from A-Rod came out that way. Robbie Cano, don't you know? Austin Roman's Romy, my homie. That came when he was between first and second after hitting a home run in Detroit. I tell that because, I don't know, it just came to me, thank goodness. And, you know, nowadays, because of technology, Austin Roman, before he left the clubhouse, heard all about it. You know, maybe his friends or family called or whoever, or maybe he heard it replayed. I mean, it's amazing about technology. And so on the plane, Roman came by where I'm sitting and said, I love it. It's great. So that gave me a kick. I have thought of something for Isaiah, and I've thought of something for Ben Rortvedt. And who else did we get?
You got Donaldson.
Yeah.
And Donaldson, easy, terrific hitter.
You ever crash and burn and just know it's not the right one and you got to come up with another?
Yes. Oh, sure. Yeah. Everything you can't do is great. You know, the only thing I can say for Michael, Susan, and myself, we are self-starters. And every single game, don't forget baseball is a lot of games and a lot of time. Every single game, the three of us try to do our absolute very best. Does it always work? Of course not. No one in any field. But I honestly believe we try as hard as we can. Anyway, about the names, it's just something I do. It's in my head. And I'll give you some examples. When I was doing the Nets, Bernard King was a rookie, and he was great. And he would, you know, draw that great Bernard King drive to the hole. And I would say, Bernard Sky, B.B. King. The teammates called him B.B. after the guitarist.
Well, Dominique, too, right?
Excuse me?
Dominique, too, right?
Oh, well, that was a big one. I began that immediately. Dominique is magnifique. And he loved it because don't forget, they play the tape of the game in the next session with the players. And everyone told me that when I would do my Dominique, he'd be there waving his fist. So it's very cute. So I did it with Dominique. I did it with Randy Whitman. That kind of thing. And with the Yankees, when I began in 89, they were terrible. And 89, 90, 91, it was awful. And I thought, my God, am I ever going to be with a winning baseball team? And then Buck and Stick Michael came in 92. It turned around. And, you know, I mentioned this before. I'll mention it again so it sinks in. The worry that fans, there's always some person who's writing into a newspaper or on the air, I'll never go to another game. Nonsense. So after the 94 World Series was blown off. Can you imagine blowing off the World Series? How stupid can they be? And because of Justice Sotomayor's ruling, they began play again in 95. And in 96, Torrey came in. And the Yankees not only started winning, but as I mentioned before, at one stretch, they drew more than 4 million people 4 years in a row. Never been done in baseball, so...
John,
I'm not worried about baseball, basketball, football, hockey succeeding. Not only are they succeeding, but the value goes up and up and up, and the value of the franchises goes up and up and up. Another reason why they shouldn't have been having this long, protracted labor problem.
I got one more question about calling games. Games all over, the Yankees win. For people that haven't been fortunate enough to see video of you saying the Yankees win. Have you ever had a time where you almost felt you were going to pass out doing that? Because it looks like you lift yourself right off the seat.
No, but I'll tell you a cute story. Susan Waldman took a day off to observe one of the Jewish holidays. And we were in Tampa. And Tino, who lives in Tampa, did the game with me. So the Yankees won a very close game, you know, the final out, and I really gave it all I had, which I do when it's a really close game. Maybe the tying and winning runs are on base, that kind of thing. And anyway, the Yankees got the third out, and I did my Yankees win. And anyway, the next day, Tino went to Susan and said, I saw him do it. I actually saw him do it. I got a big kick out of that.
It's like seeing Santa Claus.
Yeah. Right.
John, I had one more question for you. You know, we mentioned Josh Donaldson and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa coming in and, you know, Anthony Rizzo coming back as well. What do the Yankees do with DJ LeMahieu now?
Oh, that's the typical article in a newspaper or talk show. Let me ask you a question. Do you realize every day someone goes on the DL? Or IL, excuse me.
Especially with the Yankees.
Every blessed day. The problem of having an extra player is not a problem at all. And you have, you know, Rizzo and Voit now at first, and LeMahieu to back up Donaldson, Kanepelefa, and Torres. Believe me, he'll play a lot. I'll tell you another thing. At the beginning of the year, DJ LeMahieu starts to hit like he did in his first 2 years with the Yanks. Mm. He certainly will get plenty of time. That's not a problem. All right. That really,
Thank you for putting my mind at ease.
Excuse me?
Thank you for putting my mind at ease.
Oh, my goodness. There's so many injuries. You know, a guy had a line last year, which I'll share with you. I forget who it was. But he said, today's players are bigger, stronger, faster than ever before, but they're not as tough. And, you know, maybe it's the Asians who say to him, hey, if you're injured, go out. We don't want you to really get hurt. You're going to screw up a big payday. I don't know if that's it. People say that. You know, it's just one of those things you repeat. But anyway, the injuries are so unbelievable. You know, people come up and down every single day in baseball. It's very different.
I got one final question for you, John, before we let you go. Talk a lot about, you know, the Yankees are always in the mix for the big free agents. They're always being talked about, you know, picking up Freddie Freeman or whoever it is. You know, the last big splash they made was Gerrit Cole, which seems so long ago, but it was only 2 years ago. You yourself, I imagine over the years, had grown to know the boss, George Steinbrenner. And I'm interested to ask you, do you feel that he would be happy the way the team is running now, even though his kids are running the team? Would he do it differently, you think?
Oh, I think that is an outstanding question. I think he would, well, you know this, he would run it very differently. And what I would say to you is, you know, it's like I have two boys. I have four kids, but two of them are boys. And my wife says about Brad and Derek, they're like night and day. So everyone has their own personality. I mean, here are two boys, you know, born same egg, same sperm, same womb, same home, and they're very, very different. So certainly Hal's different than his dad. Now, his dad would be out there trying to make an imprint on the market. He was a great marketer, George. And it was because of George Steinbrenner that a lot of other teams took a lesson from the Yankees, how to build up other monies, other revenue streams. George was great at that. And he really started it. And remember, and you guys are old enough, I guess, that when free agency came in and the big money contracts, it's going to ruin baseball. It's going to... Well, not only it has not ruined it, it has built baseball up to where this year it's now an $11 billion business. Can you imagine? $11
billion
a year.
I think even in the 80s when they weren't that good, he just was he was fun. For an out-of-towner, he was fun. And, I just think there isn't enough.
There's an extra element. He always added that extra element.
There was something about his showmanship and his bravado and his attitude that just – was different. And that, and again, it's a different era, John, right? I mean, we're never going back, and there you find joy in different ways, but there was something unique. And I guess, you know, Jerry Jones has a tiny bit without the flair. Like, there was something about Steinbrenner that just, he had this edge to him that was just unique.
Well, I'm very prejudiced because he really liked me. He was super, super nice to me. So there's no question I'm prejudiced because of that.
All right, listen, just, you know, one last word. We'll say goodbye. You know, we're grateful for it. I mean, do you feel, I guess, the one thing I would take away, I got a 14-year-old boy and a 12-year-old boy. Do you feel like you resonate only to the 35 and up set? Are younger listeners there? Do you get stuff from younger people?
Every day.
Okay.
Every day.
My boys were so excited about this.
Every day. I think that's a lot of bull. I would use stronger words, but you're on the air. I've heard this. Howard Cosell. He got angry at baseball for some reason. He said it's a dead sport. It's old. It's slow. It's hard. And this is like 50 years ago. So I am not worried at all about baseball. I see young people in the ballpark all the time. Young people come up to me as I go outside all the time. And not a worry. It's just people trying to knock. That's all. Oh. They figure if they knock, people will recognize them. It'll be something strong, something definitive. It's all a lot of bull. Baseball is a great sport, so basketball, hockey, and football, and they'll be here. And I get some kick out of it. Tonight, I'm going to watch about 10 basketball games. So
that's right.
Anyway, no problem. That's no problem. That's just people who are, for whatever reason, who knows what their reason is, want to be negative. That's all.
Well, listen, it's a pleasure for me, and I know it's a thrill for my partners here, and to give us this much time, John, we're grateful.
Well, I enjoyed it very much. You asked good questions, and I appreciate your time, and, you know, we'll do it again, okay?
Yeah, we'll see you at the ballpark.
Thank you, John. Let's go Yankees.
No, let's not go Yankees. Episode 66, of course, Fan Base, a deep dive in the greatest rivalry.
Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.